Chapter 21. Diary entry: my cough troubled me a good deal last night, and therefore I got hardly any sleep at all. Still, I make out pretty well, and should not complain. Yesterday the third mate mended the block, and this P.M.M. the sail, after some difficulty, was got down, and Harry got to the top of the mast, and drove the halyards through after some hardship, so that it now works easy and well. This getting up the mast is no easy matter at any time with the sea we have, and is very exhausting in our present state. We could only reward Harry by an extra ration of water. We have made good time and course today. Heading her up, however, makes the boat ship seas, and keeps us all wet. However, it cannot be helped. Writing is a rather precarious thing these times. Our meal today for the 15 consists of half a can of soup and barley. The other half is reserved for tomorrow. Henry still keeps up grandly, and is a great favorite. God grant he may be spared. A better feeling prevails among the men. Captain's log. Diary entry, June 9. Latitude 17 degrees 53 minutes. Finished 2-day, I may say, our whole stack of provisions. 2, we have only left a lower end of a ham bone, with some of the outer rind and skin on. In regard to the water, however, I think we have got 10 days' supply at our present rate of allowance. This, with what nourishment we can get from bootlegs and such chewable matter, we hope will enable us to weather it out till we get to the Sandwich Islands, or, sailing in the meantime in the track of vessels thither bound, be picked up. My hope is in the latter, for in all human probability I cannot stand the other. Still, we have been marvelously protected, and God, I hope, will preserve us all in His own good time and way. The men are getting weaker, but are still quiet and orderly. Diary entry, Sunday, June 10th. Latitude 18 degrees 40 minutes, longitude 142 degrees 34 minutes. A pretty good night last night, with some weddings, and again another beautiful Sunday. I cannot but think how we should all enjoy it at home, and what a contrast is here. How terrible their suspense must begin to be. God grant that it may be relieved before very long, and He certainly seems to be with us in everything we do, and has preserved this boat miraculously. For since we left the ship we have sailed considerably over 3,000 miles, which, taking into consideration our meager stock of provisions, is almost unprecedented. As yet I do not feel the stint of food, so much as I do that of water. Even Henry, who is naturally a good water drinker, can save half of his allowance from time to time, when I cannot. My diseased throat may have something to do with that, however. Nothing is now left which by any flattery can be called food. But they must manage somehow for 5 days more, for at noon they have still 800 miles to go. It is a race for life now. This is no time for comments, or other interruptions from me. Every moment is valuable. I will take up the boy brother's diary at this point, and clear the seas before it, and let it fly. Henry Ferguson's log. Sunday, June 10th. Our ham bone has given us a taste of food today, and we have got left a little meat, and the remainder of the bone for tomorrow. Certainly, never was there such a sweet knuckle one, or one that was so thoroughly appreciated. I do not know that I feel any worse than I did last Sunday, notwithstanding the reduction of diet, and I trust that we may all have strength given us to sustain the sufferings and hardships of the coming week. We estimate that we are within 700 miles of the Sandwich Islands, and that our average, daily, is somewhat over 800 miles, so that our hopes have some foundation in reason. Heaven send we may all live to see land. June 11. Ate the meat and rind of our ham bone, and have the bone and the greasy cloth from around the ham left to eat tomorrow. God send us birds or fish, and let us not perish of hunger, or be brought to the dreadful alternative of feeding on human flesh. As I feel now, I do not think anything could persuade me, but you cannot tell what you will do, when you are reduced by hunger and your mind wandering. I hope and pray we can make out to reach the islands before we get to this strait, but we have one or two desperate men aboard, though they are quiet enough now. It is my firm trust and belief that we are going to be saved. All food gone. Captain's log. 3. Ferguson's log continues. June 12. Stiff breeze, and we are fairly flying dead ahead of it and toward the islands. Good hope, but the prospects of hunger are awful. 8 am bone today. It is the captain's birthday. He is 54 years old. June 13. The ham racks are not quite all gone yet, and the bootlegs, we find, are very palatable after we get the salt out of them. A little smoke, I think, does some little good, but I don't know. June 14. Hunger does not pain us much, but we are dreadfully weak. Our water is getting frightfully low. God grant we may see land soon. Nothing to eat, but feel better than I did yesterday. Toward evening saw a magnificent rainbow, the first we had seen. Captain said, "Cheer up, boys. It's a prophecy, it's the bow of promise." June 15. God be forever praised for his infinite mercy. Land in sight. Rapidly neared it and soon were sure of it. Two noble Kanakas swam out and took the boat ashore. We were joyfully received by two white men, Mr. Jones, and his steward Charlie, and a crowd of native men, women, and children. They treated us splendidly, aided us, and carried us up the bank, and brought us water, poi, bananas, and green coconuts. But the white men took care of us, and prevented those who would have eaten too much from doing so. Everybody overjoyed to see us, and all sympathy expressed in faces, deeds, and words. We were then helped up to the house, and help we needed. Mr. Jones and Charlie are the only white men here. Treated us splendidly. Gave us first about a teaspoonful of spirits in water, and then to each a cup of warm tea, with a little bread. Takes every care of us. Gave us later another cup of tea, and bread the same, and then let us go to rest. It is the happiest day of my life. God in his mercy has heard our prayer. Everybody is so kind. Words cannot tell. June 16. Mr. Jones gave us a delightful bed, and we surely had a good night's rest, but not sleep. We were too happy to sleep. Would keep the reality, and not let it turn to a delusion, dreaded, that we might wake up, and find ourselves in the boat again. It is an amazing adventure. There is nothing of its sort in history, that surpasses it in impossibilities made possible. In one extraordinary detail, the survival of every person in the boat, it probably stands alone in the history of adventures of its kinds. Usually merely a part of a boat's company survive, officers, mainly, and other educated and tenderly reared men, unused to hardship and heavy labor, the untrained, roughly reared hard workers succumb. But in this case even the rudest and roughest stood the privations and miseries of the voyage almost as well as did the college-bred young brothers and the captain. I mean, physically. The minds of most of the sailors broke down in the fourth week and went to temporary ruin, but physically the endurance exhibited was astonishing. Those men did not survive by any merit of their own, of course, but by merit of the character and intelligence of the captain. They lived by the mastery of his spirit. Without him they would have been children without a nurse. They would have exhausted their provisions in a week, and their pluck would not have lasted, even as long as the provisions. The boat came near to being wrecked at the last. As it approached the shore the sail was let go, and came down with a run. Then the captain saw that he was drifting swiftly toward an ugly reef, and an effort was made to hoist the sail again. But it could not be done. The men's strength was wholly exhausted. They could not even pull an oar. They were helpless, and death imminent. It was then that they were discovered by the two Kanakas who achieved the rescue. They swam out, and manned the boat, and piloted her through a narrow, and hardly noticeable break in the reef, the only break in it in a stretch of 35 miles. The spot where the landing was made was the only one in that stretch where footing could have been found on the shore. Everywhere else precipices came sheer down into 40 fathoms of water. Also, in all that stretch this was the only spot where anybody lived. Within 10 days after the landing all the men, but one were up and creeping about. Properly, they ought to have killed themselves with the food of the last few days, some of them, at any rate men who had freighted their stomachs with strips of leather from old boots, and with chips from the butter cask, a freightage which they did not get rid of by digestion, but by other means. The captain and the two passengers did not eat strips and chips, as the sailors did, but scraped the boot leather and the wood, and made a pulp of the scrapings, by moistening them with water. The third mate told me that the boots were old and full of holes, then added thoughtfully, but the holes digested the best. Speaking of digestion, here is a remarkable thing, and worth nothing. During this strange voyage, and for a while afterward on shore, the bowels of some of the men virtually ceased from their functions. In some cases there was no action for 20 and 30 days, and in one case for 44. Sleeping also came to be rare. Yet the men did very well without it. During many days the captain did not sleep at all, 20-1, I think, on one stretch. When the landing was made, all the men were successfully protected from overeating except the portee. He escaped the watch, and ate an incredible number of bananas. 152, the third mate said, but this was undoubtedly an exaggeration. I think it was 151. He was already nearly half full of leather, it was hanging out of his ears.
I do not state this on the third mate's authority, for we have seen what sort of a person he was. I state it on my own.
The portee ought to have died, of course, and even now it seems a pity that he didn't, but he got well, and as early as any of them, and all full of leather too, the way he was, and butter timber and handkerchiefs and bananas. Some of the men did eat handkerchiefs in those last days, also socks, and he was one of them. It is to the credit of the men that they did not kill the rooster that crowed so gallantly mornings. He lived 18 days, and then stood up, and stretched his neck, and made a brave, weak effort to do his duty once more, and died in the act. It is a picturesque detail, and so is that rainbow, to the only one seen in the 43 days, raising its triumphal arch in the skies for the sturdy fighters, to sail under to victory and rescue. With 10 days' provisions Captain Josiah Mitchell performed this memorable voyage of 43 days, and 8 hours in an open boat, sailing 4,000 miles in reality and 3,360 by direct courses, and brought every man safe to land. A bright, simple-hearted, unassuming, plucky, and most companionable man. I walked the deck with him 28 days when I was not copying diaries, and I remember him with reverent honor. If he is alive, he is 86 years old now. If I remember rightly, Samuel Ferguson died soon after we reached San Francisco. I do not think he lived to see his home again. His disease had been seriously aggravated by his hardships. For a time it was hoped that the two quarter boats would presently be heard of, but this hope suffered disappointment. They went down with all on board, no doubt, not even sparing that knightly chief mate. The authors of the diaries allowed me to copy them exactly as they were written, and the extracts that I have given are without any smoothing over or revision. These diaries are finely modest and unaffected, and with unconscious and unintentional art they rise toward the climax with graduated and gathering force and swing and dramatic intensity. They sweep you along with a cumulative rush, and when the cry rings out at last, land in sight. Your heart is in your mouth, and for a moment you think it is you that have been saved. The last two paragraphs are not improvable by anybody's art, they are literary gold, and their very pauses and uncompleted sentences have in them an eloquence not reachable by any words. The interest of this story is unquenchable, It is of the sort that time cannot decay. I have not looked at the diaries for 32 years, but I find that they have lost nothing in that time. Lost? They have gained, for by some subtle law all tragic human experiences gain in pathos by the perspective of time. We realize this when in Naples we stand musing over the poor Pompeian mother, lost in the historic storm of volcanic ashes 18 centuries ago, who lies with her child gripped close to her breast, trying to save it, and whose despair and grief have been preserved for us by the fiery envelope which took her life, but eternalized her form and features. She moves us, she haunts us, she stays in our thoughts for many days, we do not know why, for she is nothing to us, as he has been nothing to anyone for 18 centuries. Whereas of the like case today we should say, poor thing, it is pitiful, apostrophe and forget it in an hour. 1. There are 19 days of voyaging ahead yet. M. T. 2. 6 days to sail yet, nevertheless. M. T. 3. It was at this time discovered that the crazed sailors had gotten the delusion that the captain had $1,000,000 in gold concealed aft, and they were conspiring to kill him and the two passengers and seize it. M. T. T. At the Appetite Cure, this establishment's name is Hochbergas. It is in Bohemia, a short day's journey from Vienna, and being in the Austrian Empire is of course a health resort. The Empire is made up of health resorts. It distributes health to the whole world. Its waters are all medicinal. They are bottled and sent throughout the earth. The natives themselves drink beer. This is self-sacrifice apparently, but outlanders who have drunk Vienna beer have another idea about it. Particularly the Pilsner, which one gets in a small cellar up an obscure back lane in the first Bezirk. The name has escaped me, but the place is easily found. You inquire for the Greek church, and when you get to it, go right along by the next house, is that little beer mill. It is remote from all traffic and all noise. It is always Sunday there. There are two small rooms, with low ceilings supported by massive arches. The arches and ceilings are whitewashed, otherwise the rooms would pass for cells in the dungeons of a bastille. The furniture is plain and cheap, there is no ornamentation anywhere, yet it is a heaven for the self-sacrificers, for the beer there is incomparable, there is nothing like it elsewhere in the world. In the first room you will find 12 or 15 ladies and gentlemen of civilian quality, in the other one a dozen generals and ambassadors. One may live in Vienna many months, and not hear of this place, but having once heard of it and sampled it, the sampler will afterward infest it. However, this is all incidental, a mere passing note of gratitude for blessings received. It has nothing to do with my subject. My subject is health resorts. All unhealthy people ought to domicile themselves in Vienna, and use that as a base, making flights from time to time to the outlying resorts according to need. A flight to Marienbad, to get rid of fat. A flight to Carlsbad, to get rid of rheumatism. A flight to Kaltenutjeben, to take the water cure, and get rid of the rest of the diseases. It is also handy. You can stand in Vienna and toss a biscuit into Kaltenutjeben with a 12-inch gun. You can run out thither at any time of the day. You go by phenomenally slow trains, and yet inside of an hour you have exchanged the glare and swelter of the city for wooded hills, and shady forest paths, and soft cool airs, and the music of birds, and the repose and the peace of paradise. And there are plenty of other health resorts at your service, and convenient to get at from Vienna, charming places, all of them. Vienna sits in the center of a beautiful world of mountains with now and then a lake and forests. In fact, no other city is so fortunately situated. There is an abundance of health resorts, as I have said. Among them this place, Hochbergas. It stands solitary on the top of a densely wooded mountain, and is a building of great size. It is called the Appetite Anstalt, and people who have lost their appetites come here to get them restored. When I arrived I was taken by Professor Heimberger to his consulting room and questioned. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.